And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is ideas you may not have considered. Each of my guests is giving us new information with which to view today's top news stories. My next guest is the CEO of Pacific Research Institute, a California think tank focusing on healthcare. She's examined the newly enacted healthcare bill, and she'll tell us the truth about Obamacare. And if you have any questions or you want to call in and talk to my guest, you can call us at 639-0008. Sally Pipes is the president and CEO of the Pacific Research Institute, as I said. She's written a regular column for Chief Executive and Investor's Business Daily. Currently, she writes a monthly column on healthcare issues for the Examiner newspapers. Ms. Pipes speaks and debates and gives a invited testimony in the national, state, and level for key health issues facing the United States. She's addressed all kinds of audiences. She's been on all of the major shows. She's even debated Paul Krugman, who is a Princeton economist and a New York Times columnist at the New York Rockefeller University. She was on the opposing side of the motion, Universal Health Coverage is the Responsibility of the Federal Government. Her recent book is titled The Truth About Obamacare, What They Don't Want You to Know About Our New Healthcare Law. Joining us from San Francisco, welcome to the show, Sally. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure. I love to talk to thought leaders like yourself. So here's, I'm going to start with this because I really need a macro view of this, and it's a head-scratcher for me. So explain to my listeners this. How and why was the healthcare initiative presented to be such a national emergency, and yet many of the provisions don't even start until 2013 and beyond?
Well, you know, President Obama ran his campaign using healthcare reform as the number one domestic policy issue facing the nation. He wanted to achieve affordable, accessible, quality care. Back, starting with FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he tried to bring about healthcare reform, i.e. increasing the role of government in our healthcare. And no president had been able to do it. President Obama was very committed to it. And, of course, he was criticized a lot, even by Democrats, for the amount of time he spent on trying to get this legislation passed because, as you know, the inauguration was in January 2009. The health care law he signed was March 23rd, 2010. So it was a lot of time that Congress was working on this. I think you're right. I mean, the legislation, which, you know, has been in effect for a year and 4 months, the goals of it were, according to the president, universal coverage and bending the cost curve down. We know that the universal coverage is not going to be achieved under Obamacare. The Congressional Budget Office has said 23 million Americans will still be uninsured by 2019 out of the 50.7 million uninsured today. And the cost curve is not going to go down. The average premium, the president said over and over again, would decrease for the average family by $2,500 a year. The CBO has said the average family will face an increase of $2,100 per year. And the CBO has recently said that this legislation is not going to cost $900 billion over 10 years. It's up to 1.3. I think the real number is around 2.5 trillion over 10 years because most of the cost drivers in this legislation do not come into effect until 2014. You mentioned 2013, but the real issue, 2014, when there could be no annual limits or caps on the value of the coverage, the state-based exchanges are going to come into being, this huge Medicaid expansion, and, of course, the federal tax subsidies for people. So those are the big cost drivers. The giveaways, you know, happened in 2010, September 23rd, with the families being able to keep their children on their coverage till age 26, free preventative care, increasing that cap to $750,000 for coverage. And, of course, that child-only policies for children with pre-existing conditions would have to be written.
Mm. My guest is Sally Pipes. And, Sally, you said that President Obama was focused. My word would be myopic. How could health care reform trump job creation in an economic environment like we're experiencing right now? But that's a discussion for another time.
Right.
I want to pick it up with the fact that you said a lot of these things are going to be implemented years down the road. Now, Governor Mike Huckabee is purchasing television commercials, and he's imploring viewers to write to the White House, write to their congressman to repeal Obamacare. And the House has voted to repeal Obamacare. They're against it. The Senate, according to him, is only 4 votes shy of repealing Obamacare. How likely is it that Obamacare will be repealed?
Well, if you look at the polls, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the numbers of the numbers supporting repeal and replace of Obamacare have ranged anywhere from like 52 up to 63%. The poll this week showed 53% of Americans want to see Obamacare repealed and replaced. The elections last November, you know, the Republicans took the House back. They made some gains in the Senate. The Wall Street Journal poll showed 84% of people voted the way they did because they were very upset with the Affordable Care Act. I think there's a lot going on right now. As you said, in January, the House voted to repeal Obamacare. It, of course, didn't pass the Senate. I think, you know, the big issue, there are 2 big issues out there right now. One is the 2012 election. I think if President Obama is not reelected, if the Republicans keep the House, and they take back the Senate, it is virtually certain that early in 2013, Obamacare will be repealed and replaced. If the president is reelected, we have these constitutional lawsuits going on challenging the individual mandate. There are about 31 court cases going on. There are 3 big ones, the Virginia case, the Florida case, and the Cincinnati case. We're awaiting the 11th Circuit decision on the Florida case. Judge Vinson in Florida ruled earlier this year that not only was the individual mandate unconstitutional, the whole of Obamacare was unconstitutional. This case will probably go to the U.S. Supreme Court this fall with a decision likely in the early summer of 2012. If it is ruled that Obamacare is unconstitutional, the whole legislation in this instance will then unravel.
Be thrown out the door. My guest is Sally Pipes. We're talking to the truth about Obamacare, but let me just challenge you there, Sally, because it's already been to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has refused to see it once.
Right, but I think the pressure on the court right now, I know from conversations that friends of mine have had with several of the Supreme Court justices, that there is a lot of pressure for the court to take this case. And I think the president even would like to see it go to the Supreme Court, because, you know, he's getting so much flack about it. So I think there's no question, if you read what Randy Barnett at Georgetown University Law has said and some of the other prominent constitutional scholars, I think this definitely will go to the Supreme Court.
Right. And Randy Barnett wrote in the Washington Examiner that the health insurance is unconstitutional, according to him, because why? Because we have to mandate to buy the health care insurance. How can the government force any citizen to buy something, particularly a product that is so heavily subsidized and supported by the government? That just seems like it's the government forcing us to buy something that the government has put up for sale, and that in some ways seems wrong. What are your thoughts on that part of the constitutionality?
Well, exactly. I mean, this would be the first time in history that Congress would have the ability to order Americans to buy something in the private marketplace. So that is a very important. If they can force us to buy health insurance, they could also force us to buy the type of car they think we should buy, perhaps the Prius, that everyone would be mandated to buy that. So,
or the General Motors Volt. Let's keep it in the United States if they're going to play that game.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think that is very important. They've been pushing the argument of, you know, the cost of uncompensated care is so much, saying it's around $49 billion a year. Well, when you look at the cost of uncompensated care, you break it down, the real culprit is not that people who have insurance are subsidizing those people who don't, the uninsured. That adds to about 1% of the cost of premium of those people who have insurance. The real culprit is the government programs, Medicare and Medicaid. They short hospitals and docs by about 10%. So we are paying a premium on our insurance plans of 10% to cover the low reimbursement rates of Medicare and Medicaid. So that number, when you break it down, is highly, highly inflated. So I think, you know, it's the Randy Barnett is right. Congress has the power to levy taxes on individuals. It does not have the ability to tell us what we need to buy. So this is the crux of this of this whole issue.
Well, only one of two. The other constitutional part, Sally, that bothers me is the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is set up underneath Obamacare. Now, most of my listeners don't know what that is, but that's the board that decides how much is going to be paid. It's the regulated payment system for services. And this is interesting because this is a presidential board that has been set up. The executive branch is setting up a board that is going to tell what people are going to pay, and the only way that can change is if Congress goes back and enacts legislation to change this executive agency's aim. That's backwards. It's Congress makes the laws, the executive branch works on the laws and makes sure that they work. And this is the first time that we're seeing the reverse happen. What are your thoughts about not only that fundamental issue, but also the Independent Payment Advisory Board, Sally?
Well, right, IPAB, and people think when I talk about IPAB, I'm talking about the iPad. Of course, we're not IPAB, the Independent Payment Advisory Board. This is a board of 15 people appointed by government, basically bureaucrats, who are going to determine whether the payments to doctors and hospitals for treatment of people right now on Medicare are appropriate. And if they deem that the payments being paid to docs and hospitals are too high, they are going to have the ability, the power to reverse them. I think this is a huge one of the, along with the constitutional issue, this the control that IPAB would have is very, very important. And in fact, on July 13th, the first hearing of the Energy and Commerce Commission, a committee of the House, will be hearing the hearings take place on July 13th. And so it's going to be very interesting. I know they wanted Kathleen Sebelius, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to testify on this. But a lot of Democrats are against IPAB, and the American Medical Association, which, contrary to what people think, the AMA does not represent all doctors in this country. It only represents today about 15% of docs. They have been in favor of Obamacare, but the AMA has also come out now against IPAB. So this is a huge issue. The only thing that has been removed under Obamacare and the president signed was the 1099 reporting requirement. So I'm very hopeful that the IPAB will also be vetoed out of the
deemed unconstitutional. Well, that is great. My guest is Sally Pipes, author of the book, The Truth About Obamacare, What They Don't Want You to Know About Our New Healthcare Law. And Sally, I'm going to ask you to speculate now. If the Obamacare isn't repealed, what are the consequences, both the intended consequences and the unintended consequences that we're going to have from the new healthcare initiative?
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, it's going to be very, very expensive. You know, when Medicare came into being in 1965, they projected by 1990 Medicare would cost about $12 billion. In fact, it cost $112 billion, so a lot more expensive. This is going to be very, very expensive. So, and we're going to be, you know, moving down that path, I believe, to a single-payer, government-run Medicare for all systems, such as exists in Canada, where I grew up. We're going to see long waiting lists for care. Care will be rationed. And, you know, I don't like to use the word death panel, but care will first be rationed to the elderly people in this country. So it is so very important. The American people don't like it. And as I mentioned earlier, the polls show the American people are against it. I think the president's long-term goal, though, is when, you know, government-run health care. The government today manages 50% of health care in this country. We don't have a free market. He wants to take over that other 50%. And so, you know, once you get legislation in power and you get it in place, it's very, very hard to overturn. Milton Friedman used to always say, give me examples of things that have been reversed. And I think the Mohair subsidy is the only one that I could think of. So this is very, very important to the future of America and our long-term health.
It absolutely sounds very serious. And Sally, we're going to have Steve Forbes come on the show on the 27th of this month, and he's going to be talking about health care and what the free market can do. But I'm going to ask you to speculate on this. If, as you say, the government is involved in 50% of the health care market today, and Obama wants to move it to 100%, what if we went the other direction? What if we went from 50% down to zero? How would the free market solve some of the problems that we're having today?
Right, and Steve Forbes has quoted me in his book, Capitalism, and I write, you didn't mention this, but I write a weekly column for Forbes.com called Piping Up, and it's all on healthcare, so it's a lot of great fun. We all want affordable, accessible, quality care. The question is, how do you get there? Do you get there by increasing the role of government, or do you get there by empowering doctors and patients? And that is the focus of my work. I first would like to see the tax code changed. The federal government got us into this whole mess in the first place, in that 64% of Americans get their health care through their employer, because during World War II, when wage and price controls were in, employers got the ability to, you know, write off the cost of health care, and employees get their health care with pre-tax dollars. If you lose your job, you go out into the market, you have to buy your health insurance with after-tax dollars. I'd like to see that change so that individuals can also buy their health care with pre-tax dollars. It will really beef up the individual market in insurance, and it will also, you know, bring in more competition into healthcare.
Oh, but Sally, let me stop you right there. You want to tackle two of the biggest gorillas in the room. You want to change the tax code, which is probably the 900-pound gorilla, and healthcare, the 700-pound gorilla.
Right.
That's a lot of fighting there.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, we have to, I mean, I've been an American for 4 years. I'm so pro-America, and I want to see this country survive and compete in the global marketplace. So we've got to attack this. I think, you know, there are about 2,100 mandates on insurance companies across this country. They add 20 to 50% to the cost of premiums. States should reduce these costly mandates. If I want an insurance plan that covers in vitro fertilization, I should be able to buy it. But you may not want that. Why should you have to subsidize, you know, a plan that I want? You should be able to get the plan that you like. Third, we need to allow people to buy health insurance across state lines. I mean, if you're a young man living in New York, Massachusetts, the most expensive insurance in the country because of community rating and guaranteed issue, you might want to buy an insurance plan in Arizona or in Idaho. Right now, you can't do that. States need to do medical malpractice reform. I don't want the feds to get into this, but the cost of defensive medicine in this country is about $210 billion a year. Docs practice defensive medicine because they're afraid of being sued. So we need med mal reform. Texas has done a great job at capping non-economic and punitive damages. And actually, Rick Perry just signed legislation saying that losers pay, which is based on the British system. I think California has the micro law, so it's kept our lawsuits down. So those are some of the things that I would like to see and that would bring about affordable, accessible, quality health care for all. We would move towards a competitive marketplace in healthcare.
My guest is Sally Pipes, author of the book, The Truth About Obamacare. Sally, before I let you go, though, medical malpractice reform sounds good on paper. It certainly sounds good when you present it. Very, very political, because in the political system, the trial lawyers, the ones who are trying medical malpractice, are very much in the camp of the Democrats, don't want to see that change, whereas in a more, let's say, free market state like Texas, you can get away with that. I'm not sure you can get away with that in Ohio, New York, California, Illinois, places like that. Your thoughts on a malpractice reform and if that will ever happen at the state level?
Well, a lot of states are considering now, when they've seen that, you know, 16,000 doctors have gone into Texas to practice medicine. People that live in West Virginia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, where the med mal rates are the highest in the country. Of course, OBGYNs and neurosurgeons who have the highest price for buying med mal insurance, there's very few of these types of specialists available because of the high cost. I think, you know, it has to be tried. It will be tried. In California, Governor Brown, back in his first go-round, he signed the micro bill, the micro law here in California, and that's been very helpful. I hope he doesn't reverse it, but I think, you know, unless you try, you know, you'll never get ahead.
Very important. Very true. My guest has been Sally Pipes, author of the book, The Truth About Obamacare, What They Don't Want You to Know About Our New Healthcare Law. Sally, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Our website is www.pacificresearch.org.
Pacificresearch.org. Sally, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Bye.
You.